I'll call the Public Safety Finance Division meeting to order, and we're going to take the two bills that we have on the agenda out of order. We don't have a quorum yet, so I can't, I can't move the bills, but let's hear House File 3795, and there's a companion bill that is identical. Representative Eakin and Representative Lanning. Representative Lanning's bill is 3796. We'll be moving House File 3795 when we have a quorum. So, Representative Eakin, Lanning, do you want to tell us about the bill? And
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is a bill for a disaster relief, and the initial bill, it's for 18 Minnesota counties and one tribal nation that were impacted by the flooding earlier this year. And these are counties in the tribal nation that President Obama had signed a disaster relief declaration for. The federal government will pick up 75% of the costs for damages that were done as a result of the flooding, and the state has traditionally picked up the 25% remainder, and that's what this bill does. It picks up the 25% that the feds did not cover in those federal disaster areas. And by the way, I mentioned 18 counties. That's what this bill initially is for. There have since been six other counties that have been added to that list. And I do have maps. I don't know if they're sitting at your table right now that show the initial counties that were in those 18 counties. And you may have to look a little harder at them. I've got a colored map here, and we didn't have a color printer, but you can see lightly darker counties that are receiving that federal assistance and that this money would go to pick up the remainder of that. And as I said, we do have six other counties that were included in that. I do have a list of those here as well, and I'll get those to you later. But as far as this bill is concerned, I think it's important that we continue the tradition of stepping forward and stepping up to help those who are facing disasters of this kind. We've always done it in the past. I know we're facing a deficit situation this year, and there's been some who have expressed concerns about money coming from the general fund for this purpose, and it is coming from the general fund, but I think it's important to note you can't fund this through bonding dollars, because this is not for construction. This is for damages that are being repaired. So it has to come from the general fund. And again, it's what we've always done for people who face disasters of this sort. And it's important to note that the local units of government who would end up having to pay the cost of these damages if we don't step forward are already being cut significantly because of the deficit situation. In my view, if assistance wasn't provided for these flooding disasters, it would simply be adding insult to injury and kicking these people when they're down. We need to step forward, as we always have as Minnesotans, to ensure that these people are given the assistance they need to face these disasters and to fix up the damages as a result of them. And I do have with me today also Representative Maury Lanning, who's carrying the bill as well, and Wade Setter from the Department of Public Safety, who will answer any technical questions that members may have. So, thank you.
Very good. Representative Lanning, do you want to?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As Representative Eakin mentioned, the state of Minnesota has, in my view, always been there to help local communities whenever a disaster strikes. And that's one of the things that makes this state of ours a great state in which to live. And again, this year, up in our part of the state, in particular the Red River Basin, we suffered severe flooding damages again for the second year in a row. And when you have these situations that are repetitive in short periods of time, that adds further impact. And I also want to let you know that my community in particular, the city of Moorhead, in recent years has spent $10 million of its own money, local money, for flood mitigation projects. And the state has been there to provide significant funding for flood mitigation as well. And if it hadn't been for what the city of Moorhead has done and what the state has done, the damages this year would have been far worse. And so we're working hard and with the support of the state to make sure we put in place prevention, flood mitigation projects that lower the risk for securing or having damages result from these floods. And we're continuing to work in that regard. And so, Mr. Chairman and members, we respectfully request your support for Minnesota again stepping forward. And as you can see, we're talking about the counties that were impacted all the way from the northwest to the southeast of Minnesota, and even the metro now. The one of the counties additionally added, Representative Paymar and members, Ramsey County was one of the counties that was just recently added. Mr. Wade Sutter from the Department of Homeland Security can tell you a little bit about the process that we go through, the feds and the state goes through, to determine damages and how those are accounted for and dealt with. So if I might ask Mr. Sutter to...
We have a question real quick here before we turn to Mr. Sutter. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you pointed out the map and the change. Can you tell me what all the little dots mean? Is that part of what we're supposed to be looking at?
Representative Eakin.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom. I know that the dark lines indicate the tribal lands, and I'm not sure it doesn't show on the... I think those are also tribal lands. Those are also tribal lands. So that doesn't have anything to do with the disaster relief declaration. It's just showing where the tribal lands are located. And Mr. Chair, if I could, since we're talking about the map, again, this just shows the initial 18 counties. The ones that were added are not shaded in this map. And the ones that were added include Cottonwood, McLeod, Pennington, Ramsey, Red Lake, and Stevens counties.
I think just for the record, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olin.
The A1 backside of this one handout has the six, I think, listed. So
has what?
Has the other six counties.
Oh, okay. Very good. Let's hear from Representative Hillstrom. Are you done?
I am, Mr. Chair. I just want to say welcome to Wade Sutter. He is my former chief, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sutter, do you want to explain this process a little bit further?
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, representatives, the FEMA disaster declaration process is actually outlined in the Robert T. Stafford Act, which is a federal legislation that empowers FEMA to reimburse local units of government for expenses incurred during disaster response and recovery. The federal formula is 75% federal share and a 25% state share or local share. And in this particular case, the recommendation is to fund that at 25%. Historically, we have funded that at 25% of the state picking it up. But I can tell you going back 10 years, there's a 15-10 split that has been utilized in the past. And that is the discretion of state government. FEMA really does not have a role in that division. Where we're at in the process, we are in the front end of this process, about step three of approximately 10 steps. In fact, this week our staff and FEMA staff are out doing what we call applicant briefings, where the local units of government and nonprofits are being educated on the process to move forward for reimbursement. And so as we go through that, the next step would be filling out project worksheets where we determine what are eligible expenses under the federal law that are eligible for reimbursement by FEMA. And then, of course, the 25% share being the local share from the state.
Mr. Sutter, as long as you're there, what is eligible?
Well, it's typically, and in this disaster, Mr. Chairman, the bulk of the expenses from this disaster are really emergency measures, the building of the dikes, sandbagging, cleanup, silt is one, damages to road culverts. We end up with a lot of minor road damage to county roads and gravel roads and so forth. Those are the types of things that are involved. There's an entire list of Category A through G, and I can get that to you if you'd like it. But the bulk of this disaster is in FEMA Categories A and B, which are emergency measures and some minor repairs to roads. The difference, I think, when we look in historical pasts and the comments about bonding, which are typically tied to mitigation projects, In this case, these are emergency response and ultimately recovery costs. And most of the costs in this particular disaster, unlike last year, are costs that have already been incurred by local units of government on the response side. So a lot of these funds have been expended, and as we go through this process in the coming months, we will be filling out these project worksheets. And the intent of this legislation, with about $3.691 million, that number is not a firm number, because that's what we're estimating, and this is an estimated process at this point. Once we go through the project worksheets, we'll define what the ultimate costs are for reimbursement and what's eligible, and then that's what the final dollar amount would be. Now, I would add, with the six additional counties at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, 2 days ago, we received notice from FEMA that they'd added the six additional counties that Representative Eakin referenced. So the total dollar amount for our estimation right now is just over $4 million. What is not on your original chart is the state agency costs. There are 18 counties there, but state agencies incurred about $1 million in costs that are not in that spreadsheet. That was an omission on my part, and I apologize for that. However, I've been talking to Mr. Carger about that, and so we are aware of it. The bulk of the state agency costs would be the National Guard in particular, who has a big investment in this, obviously, in most of our flood response. The State Patrol, Department of National Resources, and our agency, too, are typically the key state agencies involved in disaster response. And if you have any additional questions, I would just, Mr. Chair, one last comment. The comment about the mitigation, the impact. I was up in the Moorhead, Clay County area with the FEMA director, Mr. Fugate, and Director Ide, and one of the comments that was from Director Ide, who couldn't be here today, was the mitigation investment that the state and FEMA made from last year's, the 2009 floods in that area, significantly reduced the potential impact of this year's flooding. Not to mention the collaboration and work that Clay County and Moorhead in particular had invested on the front end did a lot. Last year's total dollar damage estimate was about $38 million, about 2.5 times this one. This one could have been worse had they not done a lot of the preventative work that they did on the front end.
Thank you, Mr. Sayers. I have a question about, I'm not on the Capital Investment Committee, some members here maybe, I don't know, but what either Representative Lanning or Eakin, the $60 million that was in the bonding bill this year, I'm sorry?
$63 million. $63.5 million, and that was statewide.
Representative Lanning, do you want to explain that a little bit further? And yes. What was that money used for?
That is flood mitigation money that DNR then determines who's ready to spend and who has the need to spend portions of that. They have started to make some commitments of that $63.5 million. My city has received word that they're going to receive $15 million of that. For flood mitigation, additional flood mitigation work to lower damages in the future and prevent damages. Their request was over $22 million, and so far they've been told by DNR that they would get $15 million. And obviously, with that additional work that is now underway, we're going to prevent further damages down the road the next time a flood comes. And we're still in a wet cycle, and that wet cycle is, according to the experts, likely to continue for a number of more years. And as long as we remain in a wet cycle, and given the topography of the Red River Basin, we're going to incur additional flooding down the road. So this mitigation work is very important.
Representative Lanning, so just so I understand, I'm just trying to figure out, since part of this $4 million is for flood mitigation, what did I misunderstand that? So then why couldn't you use some of the bonding money and use, you know, there'd be less money for debris removal, et cetera, from this appropriation?
Mr. Chairman, the $4 million is not flood mitigation money. It's covering the cost of the damages that were incurred by local units of government. It's not flood mitigation. The flood mitigation money is provided only through the bonding, and but it doesn't. That appropriation, that $63.5 million, does not go towards recovering costs, damages that were incurred. it's only preventative. It's only the mitigation efforts for preventing.
I misunderstood Mr. Setter then. I'm sorry. Okay. Representative Eakin?
And Mr. Chair, I was just going to mention, too, that the $4 million wouldn't cover everything in the costs of cleanup efforts, for instance, as far as removal of sandbags and having to landfill the sandbags because of contamination. That is not covered under this appropriation. So the locals are still paying some costs in the cleanup as well. I just thought that was an important point to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is partially a comment, but one of you can correct me if I'm wrong. But basically, the money used in flood mitigation could not even be used for the money in these emergency situations. It's two totally different pots of money that cannot even overlap. Is that correct?
Mr. Setter?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, Representative Lanning, okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was surprised that we had $3.7 million available, quite frankly, just as a comment. And one of the things, Representative Lanning and Representative Eakin, that I have heard is that if we have $3.7 million available, why shouldn't it go for health and human services or education or another area? I just think we'd be remiss if we didn't address that today. So could you maybe address that, please?
Senator Deacon.
Sure. And Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, as I'd already said earlier, we have always stepped forward for those that, you know, have faced disasters of this nature. Last year we did with the floods in southeast Minnesota. It's a matter of stepping up for our neighbors when they're in need. And I understand your concerns about some of these other areas that are being cut, but I also think it's important to point out, as I pointed out earlier, that our local units have been cut very significantly. And again, if we do not step forward, as we always have as Minnesotans in the past, when you face a natural disaster like this, it's adding insult to injury to those local units who have already paid a great cost because of the deficit that we're facing. So I don't think they are not unscathed in this. They have already suffered greatly because of the deficit. I don't think they should have to suffer anymore.
Maybe Mr. Setter would know the answer to this. I understood that once upon a time, not too long ago, that local units of government, when we said local, meant local and not state federal match, that the actual local units, for instance, at St. Paul had flooding from the Mississippi, that the city would actually put in a portion, the state would put in a portion to match the FEMA match, the FEMA appropriation. Am I wrong on that?
Mr. Chairman, no, you're not wrong. Under the federal law, the local match really refers to the local match to be determined cost sharing by the state. In some cases, the state has picked up 10%, and locals have picked up 50%, or vice versa. In some cases, we've picked up, the state has picked up the full local match. And when we talk about local, we're talking about county and local units for government.
Right.
One example I might add in the counties just recently added this week is Ramsey County being one of them. In the initial round of preliminary damage assessments, because there were a number of areas still underwater, the estimates were only $1.6 million for the city of St. Paul. We went back and once the water receded and did some additional damage assessments, a second round in Ramsey County and the city of St. Paul, which is the bulk of that, ended up with about $2.6 million in estimated damage. What's significant about that is the state has a per capita threshold under the federal law that has to be met, and the counties have a threshold of $3.23 per capita in order to qualify for federal reimbursement. So the local match is a little bit of a misnomer because it's, from FEMA's perspective, local means state, and then the states on an individual basis determine whether the state picks up the full 25%, none of it, or a cost sharing between the state and local governments.
And Mr. Setter, so who made this determination that the state would pick up the entire match?
Mr. Chairman, this was a recommendation by the governor's office through our staff to be consistent with what we did last year in the Red River Valley, which was the 09 disasters. The state picked up the entire 25%. And we have done it in other disasters over the past 10 years on occasion.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly, you know, I'm very cognizant that the state has helped in the past. In fact, in my area, although not so much my district, but in southeast Minnesota, of course, not that long ago, we had devastating floods, and the state did help. And of course, the difference now is that we're in this terrible fiscal situation, which, of course, makes it bad for local communities as well. It's bad all around. And of course, we would like to help if we can. But one question I have, and I'm sorry if I missed this, but in the legislation, it says the appropriation does not lapse. And maybe somebody could address that. In other words, what I take that to mean is that if it doesn't get used within a time frame, that it just stays available until it's used. And I wonder why we would be doing that given the situation that we're in. Maybe somebody could help me with that.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my understanding of that would be that as long as documentation is found or is provided, the appropriation would be in effect. But there has to be documentation. The Homeland Security Office, FEMA, would require all of the documentation to show what the costs really were incurred. And as Mr. Sutter indicated, that's an involved process that takes a fair amount of time trying to gather all that information. And I don't even know last year's appropriation. I don't think all of that has been expended yet because all of the paperwork hasn't been processed. So that's another factor here, is that local units of government have incurred costs that they are going to end up waiting for an extended period of time to get it covered. They may in the end get it covered, but in the meantime, they've incurred costs that they have to take out of reserves or find some pot of money somewhere to cover the costs. Maybe Mr. Sutter has further.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I apologize. I do not know the direct meaning of language, but I can tell you that these disasters, this recovery phase, as we're reimbursing funds and doing cleanup, takes a period of time. It takes 3, sometimes 4 years to complete all the projects that are evaluated. The federal process, as you might imagine, is somewhat involved in the reimbursement. So I don't know what the specific meaning is, but I can tell you it's a multi-year process. Representative Lanning is absolutely correct. In the 2009 disaster, we are still processing reimbursements for that particular disaster, and we're 13 months beyond it.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you. The corollary to that question, I guess, is that I think a little bit earlier I heard our guests say that we don't know what the total cost will be, and that, you know, and which is understandable, certainly. But this is a fixed appropriation. So, you know, how is that working? I mean, is there going to, would we expect that if the costs go higher than this, that you'd be back? Or maybe I could, you know, ask one of my colleagues this. Would you intend to come back and ask for more if the costs go higher? I mean, you see what I'm saying? It looks like it could go either way, and I don't know, you know, what it means to have this fixed number in since we seem to be so unable to really know what we're going to be on the hook for here.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Liebling. The number is an estimate right now, and we don't know at this point the final absolute number. But once this is put into law and once we pass it as a legislature and the governor signs it, if you find more costs beyond that, you're out of luck. And so if later on they find that there were additional costs of whatever number that might be, $1 million or $2 million or whatever, they would not be covered. And then you'd have the question about whether or not you'd have another claim later on trying to get additional compensation. But the appropriation that we passed last year My understanding is that when that's all gone, it's all gone, and if it hasn't covered all the costs, you would have further claim that you have to be making.
That's the one that you're speaking about, the $1.6 million, Representative Lanning?
No, I'm saying from last year, the legislature authorized some over $17 million for disasters around the state. That was again statewide, all of the federally declared disaster areas. And I'm saying that that was at the end when that was passed and signed into a law, that's a fixed number. And as Mr. Setter indicated, we still haven't finished processing all of those damages and costs. And Mr. Setter may have further comment.
Representative Eakin, did you want to respond?
Yeah, I just thought I'd just respond quickly, too. And obviously, there are things that are being done and already costs that have been incurred that need to be reimbursed, and that's why we need an appropriation immediately. But again, there's more that are coming in, so it is an estimate, as Representative Lanning said, and we may need to make adjustments later. But there needs to be an appropriation right now, obviously, because there are things being done right now that need to be reimbursed.
Can I ask Mr. Kerger, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but just this money's coming out of the reserve account. Is that, do I understand it correctly? And was this anticipated at the time that, I mean, can you just explain the process of how we're, where we're getting the money from?
Mr. Chair and members, the governor in his recommendation and letter, I think, had the money coming from the cash flow account, but I think it's up to the House of Representatives to determine where this pot of money will be coming from, and that will be Chairman Solberg and Carlson.
Very good. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, natural disasters are the very reason why this legislature has always had a rainy day fund. And I think that that is a very important public policy that we shouldn't forget. And also, members, the Minnesota Constitution recognizes the state government, and it is the legislature who created local governments to, because we thought that they could do a better job doing the local management of the necessary things that local communities needed. So I'm going to be supporting this. I think we have consistently always come to the aid, and whether we're doing 25% or 10 or 15%, that, of course, is a debate for the legislature to be having. But we've always stepped up during natural disasters, and I'll be voting to do that again today.
Thank you. Other questions? I do think this issue of the local match, though, is important, and I'm not sure that we need to resolve this today. I think everyone, you know, probably is supportive of the bill, but I have some concerns, and I, you know, Representative Eakin, you can say that your areas have been hit by state cutbacks. Well, the whole state has been hit by cutbacks, and so, I mean, I'm not sure that argument totally works for me, but I... at any rate, I think that that's, I hope at the Finance Committee level we'll discuss that a bit further. So now we have a quorum, unless there's any further discussion. I will move House File 3795, and the motion will be that, I will move House File 3795, and the motion will be that the 3795 be passed. And recommended to pass and move to the Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion of that motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, since there are two, I will move House File 3796 with the same recommendations.
Very good. Any discussion? Representative Olin moves. Well, yeah. He's moving the bill. Representative Olin, do you want the bill voted on?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. So Representative Olin moves House File 3796, and that with the recommendation that that the bill will go to the Committee on Finance. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Any further? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Representative Morley is not here. Just a second. And Mr. Mers, you are here. I guess, why don't you come up and you can explain the bill. If Representative Morley comes in the next few minutes, we will hear his bill. Otherwise, we won't. So, Mr. Mers, I don't know what the situation is, nevertheless, why don't you explain the bill and the compact? And okay. Representative Mr. Mers.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ken Mers. I'm a director with the Community Services Division within the Department of Corrections. And Representative Mullery's bill, which was House File 3131, and now it's Senate File 2891, is the framework for a new interstate compact for juveniles. Back in 2002 session, the legislature passed the framework for a new compact for adult offender supervision, and we've now had 8-plus years of experience with that. So the Council of State Governments over the last 3 years has been in the process of passing on a national basis the compact for juveniles. Basically, it is the almost identical framework of the adult compact, with the idea being that the new commission, the new national commission, would develop rules for the transfer of juveniles supervision from state to state, and then would give some enforcement value to those rules, which was lacking in the past. In addition to the development of rules, the idea and the concept behind the compact is to develop a nationwide tracking system where all transfers would be in the same system. It would be a paperless system, electronic system, and this is the system that has been developed on the adult side and now again is looking to be duplicated for on the juvenile side of the system. I believe the reason that we're here in front of your committee is that if Minnesota were to pass the new compact and become a member state within the National Commission, and currently there are 43 states or jurisdictions, the Virgin Islands is one jurisdiction, who have passed the juvenile compact. And so we are looking to become a part of that and become a member state. If we do that, there is an annual fee of approximately, they estimate, $17,000 a year to be a member state of the juvenile compact. That's based on numbers as far as the number of juveniles that get transferred out and into each of the individual states. We have some question about the number. We'll be talking to them about that. I personally think it'll be a little bit less than that, probably more like 14,000 than the 17,000. That minimal cost, we are not asking for any appropriation. We're not asking for any new money. That will be covered within our existing budget.
So, Mr. Mers, it's $17,000, but the fiscal note talks about $30,000. Where did...
In the language of the compact, or this framework, that language was put into the adult compact back in 2002. Then Chair Stanek of this committee had some concerns about them constantly continuing to raise an annual fee, and so he wanted to put a cap on that. So that cap was put into the adult compact. When we went to do the juvenile compact, we just included that identical language. Quite frankly, we thought it was a good idea. Just that's a cap. That's got nothing to do with what the actual fee will be.
Representative Sterner, do you want to come up and I will move House File 3131. With a recommendation that it pass and be sent to the Committee on Finance. Senate file 2891. And don't want to put you on the spot, but you're a co-author, and we don't know where the chief author is.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
So for now, you're the chief author.
Thanks for hearing our bill.
Mr. Mears, you say that the department will absorb this. Can you say a little bit about how you're going to do that and what fund this is coming out of at the department?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I do have a line item budget in my budget for the Interstate Compact. And within that unit, we currently administer the adult compact as well as the current juvenile compact, the old compact. And so within that budget, quite frankly, there's turnover. So there's always a little bit of salary savings during the course of the year within that. We also have a portion of funding that we use for returning juveniles that may run away and they are picked up out of state and we have to bring them back, so that we have some money for that, and if we don't spend all of that, we can use part of that for this also. And so there are line items within that budget that I will use.
And besides the legislative membership, who would be the other appointees?
We've talked with JJAC, the Juvenile Justice Advisory Council. We will invite a member of them to join our committee. We have existing members from all three delivery systems that supervise juveniles in the state of Minnesota, the Community Corrections Act counties, the County Probation Officer Organization, as well as our own field services operation. There are members from each of those that will be on. And we've already had a discussion with our adult council. We've been talking about the juvenile compact for the last year or so, and they have agreed to sit as a joint state council covering both adults and juveniles. So the only additional members we will be adding are those that have an interest within the juvenile criminal justice community.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I served on the Interstate Compact for adults. I think for 2 years I was the legislative person. And members, it's very important that we participate in the Interstate Compact, because otherwise everybody else sets the rules and we have to follow them, or we can't set restrictions on juveniles coming. And so it's very important that our state be at the table as these decisions are being made.
Representative Sterner, do you have anything, any comments about the bill? Or?
Well, I just think it's an important one. I think there's a lot of disjointed actions with our juvenile system in that, and I think the more we can have interstates working and intergovernment to find juveniles, I think it's important. I mean, just from a personal experience, I have a friend that has a juvenile son that it's hard to keep him. There's not enough teeth in the law, and he's been in Nevada or so, and I think the more we can kind of track it as together, I think it's a better for our criminal justice system.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, then I will we will vote on House Senate File 2891, and the recommendation is that this bill will pass and be sent to the Committee on Finance. Is there any more discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. I need a motion to approve the minutes of March 25th, 25.
Thank you, Chair Premier.
Representative Severson. Thank you, Representative Sterner. Mr. Mears. Representative Severson moves the motion, the minutes of March 25. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails. Is there anything else before the committee? Thank you for coming in, members. This meeting's adjourned.